Good afternoon, you're listening to Camp SK News for Friday, November 14th. I'm Taylor Heckert. Petersburg senior Logan Tao brought home gold and bronze medals from the state swim meet held last weekend in Anchorage. Camp SK caught up with the team after they returned home and enjoyed a celebratory noise parade. Fire engines, police cars, and a school bus wind through the streets of Petersburg celebrating the Petersburg High School swim team. As the parade finishes its lap around town, a surprise is waiting for the team back at the high school. The Viking Swim Club, Petersburg's youth swimming team, held up handmade signs, cheering and congratulating the high schoolers on their successes at state. Head coach Andy Carlisle says he was very pleased with the team's performance in Anchorage.
Everybody got lifetime bests at some point in the proceedings, and Logan won the 100 free.
Senior Logan Tao came into the state competition seeded first for the boys' 100-yard freestyle, which he won with a time of just over 46 seconds, about half a second faster than the second-place finisher. He also placed third in the boys' 200-yard freestyle. Carlisle says Logan's improved a lot since his freshman year.
When he was a freshman, he didn't make it to state. When he was a sophomore, he did, but didn't final. So he went and swam prelims, and then he was done. Last year, he stepped up really big and got third in the 200 free. And this year, he was third in the 200 free with a time that would have won last year and won the 100 free.
Logan says it took a lot of hard work to make it to the top of the podium.
All that hard work pays off, you know, those early mornings and those hard practices. You know, those moments where you don't feel like you're getting better, but you are, and it's like pushing through that. It means the world.
Logan's sister, sophomore Lexi Tao, had her own wins at state. Last year, she took first at state in the 100-yard breaststroke. While she placed third in the event this year, she swam faster and broke her own personal record. She says the season went by quick.
It was definitely faster paced than last year. Like, I definitely, like, felt like I was improving more this year. And, like, I had a feeling that I was going to do better at state than what I felt last year.
Lexi also placed fifth in the girls' 50-yard freestyle. She was also a member of the four-person girls' relay team, which took sixth in the 200-yard medley. Senior Brooklyn Whitethorn was also on the relay team and says they grew a lot in that event throughout the season.
We started off, you know, just pretty average, but as we, like, got closer to regions, we started shaving off a bunch of time, and at regions, we shaved, like, 5 seconds off, so that was pretty good. And then we got about the same time at state, so.
Since it's Brooklyn's last year of high school, the end of the season has been bittersweet for her.
I've been swimming since I was 6 years old, so it's just, like, kind of the end of an era for me. It was emotional, but also kind of, like, relieving at the same time.
Sophomore Bella Miller, who also swam the relay, says she feels the same.
It won't be the same without Logan and Brooklyn. You know, yeah, we'll miss them.
With all these accomplishments under the team's belt, what's Coach Carlisle's main takeaway?
They made us proud, again, as they always do.
Now, the swimmers get to take a well-deserved rest after a very competitive season. In Petersburg, I'm Taylor Heckert. Some Wrangell high schoolers got to process a seal last Monday for an oceanography class that incorporates Alaska Native knowledge. And they shared what they learned with younger students. KSDK's Colette Zarnicki visited the classroom with them to hear about the culture and science behind the lab.
What is that?
Yeah, that's part of the backstrap.
A bunch of fifth grade students gather around a seal in the home economics class. They're visiting the classroom to see how the four high school students are processing it for an oceanography lab intensive. It's part of a dual credit course for high school students. The young students are listening to an elder, Henry Larson, talk about traditional seal hunting. He grew up in Sitka and Petersburg, but lives in Juneau now. He harvested this seal this morning for the class. He sews the pelts into wallets, headbands, pillows, scarves, and earrings. Skills that he learned as a young boy.
I've been sewing since 1964. My grandmother taught me how to sew.
One fifth grader points out the blood on the fur sitting in a cooler and asks how to clean it.
I use soap, Dawn soap, and a brush and get all the fat and oil off of it, and it'll be. So as a skin sewer, I want my material to look like her earrings. a lot of the times people won't clean them like that, so they turn yellow.
Larson says they're processing every part of the seal, from the head to the flippers. Sea Alaska Heritage Institute contracted him to harvest it for the class and share his knowledge.
Coming here to the school and teaching, showing the younger kids to get involved with some of the hunt or some, what the animal looks like when the hide's off or anything, that would be great. That'll be in their heads forever, and then they'll be like, oh, I want to start doing that.
For him, spending time with students is about passing down knowledge so the culture continues on.
I'm just glad these young people, like Jackson, is here. He's wanting to see what the animal looks like. He's not able to shoot one, but he's always wanted to see it. And like that means a lot to me. He's wanting to learn that.
He's talking about Junior Jackson Carney, one of the four students in this environmental science course called Ocean as Teacher. This is the oceanography lab intensive part.
It's really cool to get the experience to see a seal getting processed like this, because it's just knowledge that not everyone gets to see, not something everyone gets to experience.
He says the group took off the hide first, then processed everything else. Even the vertebrae got boiled. He says the first thing he noticed was how dark the meat is.
It's because of the amount of oxygen they need to have in their muscles so they can dive deeper and hold their breath longer. And then an offset between hemoglobin and
myoglobin.
That's what causes it to be so dark.
Carney says he was also surprised by the seal's features. The large, completely dilated black eyes, adapted for deep water, and the claws hidden in their fins.
When they're swimming, they're just tucked away. But when they go on rocks, they can go on their tippy toes. And then their claws stick into the rock. It's pretty sweet.
The oceanography course is a collaboration between University of Alaska Southeast, Sea Alaska Heritage Institute, or SHI, and five partner communities in Southeast Alaska. SHI funds the $9 million grant aiming to integrate Indigenous science into STEAM education. STEAM stands for Science, Technology, Engineering, Art, and Mathematics. Krissa Houston is the STEAM Pathways Grant Manager for SHI.
We also hire cultural specialists, and so they have access to Tlingit, Haida, and Tsimshian knowledge holders to guide them in their lessons for appropriate incorporation of our cultures.
She says there is a shift in acknowledging Indigenous science, so students can build real pathways forward using it.
Never had these opportunities as a Tlingit student growing up in Southeast, but having the opportunity to have students use immersive technology such as environmental DNA analysis with traditional harvesting and processing is so memorable, and that is the core of this work that really gets me excited about this job.
Bridget Reynolds is the co-adjunct instructor of the dual enrollment environmental science course at the university.
We developed this course to bridge traditional knowledge with oceanographic, like what we'd consider Western oceanographic knowledge. So we've been doing lots of different topics focused in on the physical characteristics of the ocean, and then combining those with traditional stories and Indigenous science.
She says this particular oceanography class helps students see why seal hunting remains vital for Southeast Alaska Indigenous people.
One characteristic is people like, oh, that's not science, but again, actually is full of so much understanding of place and so much connection to the world here in Southeast Alaska.
Reynolds says this is the third year this course is offered, rewritten as a college-level course and accessible to partner communities through travel labs. She says all the seal meat from today's lesson will be distributed through the local tribe, Wrangell Cooperative Association. In Wrangell, I'm Colette Zarnicki.
Juneau's avalanche forecasters are gearing up for the winter. The local electric utility and the State Department of Transportation recently reinstalled scientific instruments to help them predict avalanche risk at their largest research site in town. K2O's Alex Solomon went along to see what it takes to make accurate forecasts.
After riding up the Gold Belt tram and taking a short walk, Mike Janes pulls on a harness and climbs up a metal weather tower on the north-facing slope of Mount Roberts in the pouring rain.
Just, can you get me like a box end wrench? Yep. They should be in that red tool bag.
Janes is an avalanche forecaster at Alaska Electric Light and Power. He's reinstalling sensors that will help predict the threat of avalanches once Juneau's famous rain turns to snow. Mount Roberts and Mount Juneau loom over downtown. The steep slopes are marked by a history of avalanches and landslides, written in vertical chutes and tree rings. Avalanches are frequent in Juneau, but only a few have been disastrous. In 1962, an avalanche hit dozens of homes in the Barrens neighborhood downtown.
It is quite fantastic way to wake up at 5:10 in the morning with snow and glass in your face and a screeching wind smothering with snow all over the place.
That's Murray Walsh, Juneau's former community development director. He's reading a letter from his aunt, whose house was damaged in the 62 avalanche, for a KTOO documentary. And then in 2008, a massive avalanche took out AELNP's main power line to Juneau, forcing the city to rely on diesel generators for 2 months. Since then, the utility has built barriers to protect energy infrastructure. Jane says avalanches occur when a weak, unstable layer of snow forms, causing the layers of snow that accumulate on top to slide off. The different instruments he installs will help him understand when that weak layer forms and where in the snowpack it is. First, he attaches a snow height sensor to a pole about 15 feet up the tower.
That's vertical. That looks pretty close. I can go just temporarily send it out, and I can always bring it back. It looks like it's not quite lined up.
It sends down sound waves, which bounce off the snow and back to the sensor, measuring its height. Then he hangs a string vertically from the tower. It has nodes to measure temperature throughout the layers of snow. Next, Janes points to an instrument sticking off the side of the weather tower.
So that right up there, probably one of our most important instruments, that white cylinder with the black top, that's a heated tipping bucket, and that measures precipitation.
It's heated to melt snow, so forecasters can measure how much water is in the snowpack. Then he points to a small double-cylinder sensor called a net radiation meter.
That particular sensor is important for understanding when we're getting like weak layers forming at the surface that are going to become problems later.
How? Let's break it down. The Earth gives off heat called long-wave radiation, which travels up through the snow and air and then gets reflected back down to Earth by clouds that act as a sort of thermal blanket. But on a clear night, the heat escapes into the atmosphere and can cause the top layer of snow to get really cold really fast. Jane says that makes it become sugar-like.
And then if that stuff gets buried, then it becomes like a future weak layer that avalanches can run on.
This year, AELNP, the Alaska Department of Transportation, and other agencies will feed all of this data and more into a Swiss snowpack model. Patrick Dreyer is an avalanche and geohazard specialist at DOT. He says using the Swiss model could help Alaskans better predict how layers of snow are forming at high elevations.
That's especially relevant in Alaska, where we have limited high elevation monitoring sites, but we have miles of roadway that we're forecasting for.
He says using the emerging technology can help them make more informed decisions. Those decisions include things like setting off explosives to trigger avalanches before they become too big, or putting up barriers to protect infrastructure in areas where avalanches happen frequently. But Dreyer says there's a lot of variability between where they collect data and all the places where avalanches can occur. Plus, snow dynamics change, so no prediction is perfect. In Juneau, I'm Alex Solomon.
For Campus K, I'm Taylor Heckert.